AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions. We're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com.
Corn futures prices just climbed to a near 8-year high overnight, trading above 720. Soybeans at a nearly 8-year high, nearing that $16 mark, while wheat futures also 8-year highs above 750 a bushel. Lean hogs at 6.5-year highs. Copper at its highest point in a decade. Chinese steel setting new records, as is lumber. 2021's getting real, and agriculture's at the heart of it all. We'll discuss that and more today on AgriTalk.
Live from Turnt Up Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Shay Myers, then it's Randy DeCoot from Farmers National, then we'll talk with Kurt Blades of AEM, and in the final segment, Tricia Beal from the Farm Journal Foundation. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now, filling in for Chip on loan from Ag Day TV, the hot stepper with the verbal hot pepper, Clinton Griffiths! Good morning, Clinton!
Good morning. I just wonder how long it takes you to come up with all that stuff. Nice. It is so great to be here. Thank you for the hearty welcome. Thank you for the hearty welcome. Of course, you know, all thinking about Chip this week.
So he deals
with a family thing. So, you know, hey, this is a wonderful time to be alive. So much happening. Mm-hmm. 2021 is... As my wife and I keep saying, hey, everything's fine. It's all going to be fine.
There you go.
Everything's fine. It's fine, Davis. It's all going to be fine.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I know.
I feel like you said that just like two or three times too many for me to believe it now.
It's all going to
like,
be fine.
Like, you know, you deliver something like, it's going to be fine. And then you just leave it there.
Yeah.
That's how I know it's going to be fine.
I know. Which, 2021. It's not 2020. It's different.
No.
It's different, but in a fun way. It's going to be fun.
It's kind of like, you know, when you come out and say things like, this is not a land grab, or we're not going to try and take away your red meat, I promise. No, seriously. No, really. No, seriously.
Hey, lots of
I get nervous.
I know. Lots of debate about all that stuff. But here's the biggest issue, and you and I need to have a very direct discussion about it, because I feel like this may be the most important thing that we discuss all week on this show.
Yes.
We're in the middle of a chicken wing supply crisis. I know, I said it, chicken wing supply crisis.
What?
We're having a serious problem sourcing enough chicken wings to feed the American population. In fact, you know, wing prices in February hit an all-time high. All-time high. Suppliers, restaurants can't get enough chicken wings. It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Good thing we got the Super Bowl out of the way already. I mean, that helps. But I mean, there's two on every bird. How is it just the wings? Are there wingless chickens out there now? Is this a horrible, horrible step in the evolutionary process of poultry?
Listen.
Yeah, they won't even have wings in the future.
We're having to turn to boneless wings, which is how you know it's serious. That's how you know it's very serious, is we're having to turn to boneless wings. But how about these prices, huh? I mean, for goodness sakes, $7.20 overnight. Soybeans getting up in near that $16. You know, you got lean hogs. Yeah, I mean, just a litany of stuff. Lumber's double what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I'm going to take my 401k and I think just invest it in wood. I mean, I think
and
maybe
some,
buy a sawmill.
Sure,
seems like a good idea. You know, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. I never would have saw that coming.
Wow. You're strong with the dad jokes today. Hey, let's get some news. What's happening on, like, you know, other news? What's happening around the country?
Well, Clinton, President Biden intends to raise capital gains taxes for those earning more than $1 million per year. His top economic advisor confirmed that on Monday. Brian Deese, the head of the National Economic Council, said at a media briefing that Biden's upcoming tax plan would set the new threshold for higher capital gains taxes. Revenue would go toward funding major new social spending measures that the president is set to unveil in a joint congressional address tomorrow evening. Deese did not specify whether the income threshold is for individuals or for households, but he described the increases affecting 0.3%
of taxpayers. That's about 500,000 American households, Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, given my present level of income, I think I'm safe, at least for now.
At least for now, you're going to be all right. But, you know, obviously a proposal obviously has to get through Congress. But, you know, I think all of us are expecting some sort of movement on the tax front. We've talked a lot about estate tax. We've talked about the stepped up basis and all these things. Mm-hmm. Obviously something that we're watching. You know, whether or not it ends up hitting farms and ranches, I think, is the big question. Right. And how, you know, in the value of assets and such.
Well, and revenue would go toward funding major new social spending measures. That's a little more nebulous than I would like for it to be.
Yeah, it's not exactly spelled out. Yeah, so that is right. Something, obviously, that maybe we'll get more details on, which, you know, as you and I know, a lot of times we don't get all the details until things get passed.
Well,
so.
And on that note, shameless plug for the Landowner Newsletter. I've been putting it together. I've almost got it done now. And it was interesting at the most recent climate summit just last week where they were tying social issues to the climate.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, I think we'll probably see these social issues continue to come up and be a part of spending packages moving forward. Moving on.
Yes, sir.
The U.S. has fallen to 10th in the world in terms of research and development investments as a percentage of GDP, and at the current pace will soon lose its longtime spot as the largest research and development investor globally to China. Chinese companies have a 60% market share in wind turbine manufacturing, nearly 80% for solar module cells, and over 80% for battery cells used in electric vehicles. This, according to a White House report, electric vehicles, 80% of the battery cell R&D is coming right out of China. Clinton.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, our manufacturing core. What are we doing, you know, are there things that we can be making here that kind of set us up? And I think there's a lot of stuff on the table. I think this is just another few things that we continue to look at and see, hey, you know, as a country, are these things that we need to be making here if they're that important?
Yep. Well, House Republicans are prioritizing energy and climate change as they craft a message at their annual retreat in Orlando this week. That could help them win back the majority. Also, USDA will expand pandemic electronic benefit transfer benefits to provide low-income school children access to food. The White House released an announcement from the USDA that it is kicking off a new effort funded by the American Rescue Plan to provide adequate nutrition for more than 30 million children over the summer months by expanding pandemic electronic benefit transfer benefits. Big time for children. You know, a lot of those kids, the lower income kids, they really come to rely on the nutritional benefits and just having enough food to eat
from
school lunches. And then, you know, in the summer break, maybe they don't get enough food. So I think this is a good thing here to fill that gap.
Yeah, absolutely. Already funded. Good to see that going. You know, the school year has been a mess depending on what part of the country you're in and what the system is. And, you know, parents trying to work around kids' schedules and e-learning and everything, all of that together. I mean, if this helps keep kids fed and healthy, I'm fine with it.
Well, and Clinton, I'm sure you already knew this, but shoppers are heading back to the mall, offering hope that the worst of the pandemic downturn is over for that industry. Foot traffic is up about 86% from the same month last year, and customers are spending more on casual wear, accessories, jewelry, and watches, while sales of formal dresses and men's suits have lagged behind. It might be time for us to get a good deal on a suit. What do you say, Clinton? Let's head to the mall. Huh?
No, nobody's buying suits right now. Everybody's working from home in sweatpants. Hey, but I'm dudded up. I'm wearing a suit for the last year just because, you know, the day job keeps it as a requirement. What are you going to do?
Sure.
All right,
sure.
We've got a big show here. Happy to be here. We're going to be talking about produce. We're going to be talking about labor shortages. We're going to be talking about land prices, all that more coming up right here on AgriTalk.
All is well!
Remain!
American-based and family-run, Simplot Grower Solutions knows what it takes to keep a farm and your way of life productive and thriving. It takes field-proven insights backed by trusted technologies and products that help you get the most out of every acre. It takes a local ag expert you can grow with, a down-to-earth partner focused on your success. Head to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com and take the next step with us. Simplot Grower Solutions, in your fields, by your side.
Mm.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Clinton Griffiths filling in for Chip Flory today, along with Davis Michelson. Happy to be here on AgriTalk today.
Happy to have you.
You know, it's awesome to be here. So many things going on. This has just been a crazy year. And, this week we're seeing some wild, wild prices. Some of the things are a result of what's been happening over the last year with kind of pandemic recovery, changing administrations, things like that. Here to give us a little bit of perspective, we're bringing in Shay Myers, the CEO of Owyhee Produce. Shay, I believe you're out of Oregon out there, and you and I talked right as this pandemic was hitting because you had, a bunch of product that I believe you were trying to find homes for, and you've been talking to consumers quite a bit about produce and onions and different things, but this week it's been the last couple of weeks it's been a hot topic has been asparagus. Set this up for us a little bit about what you've been dealing with.
First of all, thanks for having me on. The situation with asparagus with labor in general continues to be very challenging. Last year we were dealing with the pandemic, the change in the supply chain, and now we're dealing with, all of the visa processing that's trying to happen and occur on the border, combined with unemployment benefits that are making farm labor even that much more unattractive. So getting people in the fields to pick these crops is becoming nearly impossible during certain times of the season. And that's in our area. That's right now.
Right. That's happening right now. You put up a video the other day on TikTok that was basically you standing in an asparagus field saying, hey, we're going to have to till this all under and throw it all away because we can't get people here and get them processed in time to come do the work. What was the reaction from people whenever you put that up? I mean, it was really raw and honest.
Yeah, I'm getting to a point where I'm getting pretty raw and having to be very honest. I think a lot of us want to run things through a filter. And, a lot of people that I talk to in agriculture, we're exhausted. We're tired of fighting the government, Mother Nature, and everything else at the same time when, the return on our investment seems to dwindle more and more. But so it was easy to be raw. It was really easy. The video now has about 3 million views. And obviously it resonated with a lot of people, but for a lot of different reasons. For some, it was immigration and the need that we have for migrant labor. For others, it was the fact that so many people were unwilling to work. For other people, it was the fact that I wasn't paying enough. So I think it resonated on a lot of different levels. And, some people didn't like that. They didn't feel like $16 an hour was enough. And some thought it was too much. It just on a lot of levels, it really touched home for people.
So Shay, what do we do about this, right? I mean, yes, we can talk about it. We can have these conversations, but bottom line is there are crops in the field right now that we may just have to throw away if we can't get enough help here. What are we doing about it? What can we do about it? What needs to be done?
Yeah, I think first of all, the average American, that isn't a farmer needs to understand what it takes to get food on their table. And when they understand that, they will be a lot more willing to raise their voice and concern along with those of us in agriculture. And so that's the first thing. I think people, more of us need to be making an effort to show what we do on a daily basis as farmers. Then we need the political system to be involved as these voices are raised so that they can help us and support us. You can't have people showing up 60 days late from their date of need on an agricultural visa program. That does not work. And there's no reason that that's happening other than a disconnect and a misunderstanding between the person behind a desk who hasn't had the experience in the field and those of us that are trying to put food on that person's table.
Do you have any other crops at risk while you're waiting on help?
Right now, we can hold our own. We do have some temporary crews on the asparagus, so we're beginning to try and harvest the field that we, had to walk by for a week. Our watermelon crop got planted, so as long as we can get people here for harvest time, we should be okay. But we're only kicking the can down the road, if I can add that, because until we really address the problem, we're not going to have a solution. And what I mean by that is, we, as Americans, we have to consider where our food's coming from. 80% of asparagus production now goes, is now done in Mexico, because it's $8 a day for labor versus $16 an hour. Mm. That's going to continue to happen. And unless the American consumer realizes what the cost is, and I mean, their unwillingness to pay more at retail for their food means, you know, people working for 10 times to 20 times less than they make here in the United States.
Well, and us continuing to import more of our food over time. Shay, it's just been an incredible story to watch. We'll continue to check back in with you over time to see how things are going, maybe to kick around ideas and to continue this conversation, because it is so important that the American consumer understand what it takes to put food on the table and what it means for the farm. You know, I really appreciate the fact that you're willing to stand up and say these things and take a stand out there, because no doubt you're hearing from all corners of the globe and all corners of consumer conversations about, you know, what you're facing and why, because everybody's got an opinion these days. So, hey, Shay, really appreciate you talking with us. Thank you for taking a few minutes today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, so, Davis, to kind of switch gears here a little bit, we're going to bring in Randy Dickhoot, who's the Senior VP Real Estate Operations, Farmer National Company, and really kind of dig into some of the other side of what's going on with these higher commodity prices, and that is demand for land and what people are willing to pay. And Mr. Dickhoot, thank you so much for joining us. Just set us up with a real basic, you know, where we stand on land prices and how things are trending now.
Well, thank you for having me. But yeah, it's been very interesting this past year. You know, when COVID hit, the land market last a year ago, you know, kind of went quiet because nobody knew what really to think in longer term. But then as the summer went along, got, you know, kind of came back. And in the fall, it started land market perk up a little bit. A little more optimism, grain prices getting a little better. But then as we went through the winter on into the early spring land sale season, we really saw land values for good crop land and the good cropping grain belt areas that increased, you know, 10% or so in a lot of cases. And, you know, some sales reaching those 2013 peak levels and or nearly so. So, and that's continued, and that was as a result of the government cash that was pumped into the farm economy in 2020, and then some additional payments in 2021, and then the rising, you know, outlook for grain prices and the low interest rates and the low supply of or lower supply than sometimes land for sale. So all that went together, and you had the farmer demand increasing, willing to pay up and buy when land came for sale, because it's a fairly rare thing. You know, only 1% or less sells in the open market every year, so you have to buy when it comes up. And secondly, there were some, you know, investors being more interested in the land market. Even though farmers buy, you know, 70 to 80% of what comes up for sale, the investors were still there with some interest. So you put all that together, and it really perked up the land market, and that is continuing right now.
Randy, I'm very interested in the non-farm investor class of buyers there. Now, you mentioned that you've seen some. Have you seen an uptick in interest from those non-farmer buyer investor types, or are we about what you would expect in a normal year?
As I mentioned, you know, farmers and ranchers still buy the bulk of the ag land that comes up for sale.
Sure.
Everywhere. That will vary by state. You know, a state like Iowa, for example, has anti-corporate laws and some restrictions on foreign investment and so forth. So you're definitely going to have a higher percentage of farmer buyers, but also local investors. You know, somebody that's retired or, you know, another income, and they buy farmland as investment. So that's your class. It's always been there of local investors interested in farmland. They continue to buy, but no more aggressively, probably much more anyway than they have been. There's some outside investors that might live in another state, and they're just looking for some farmland to buy for various reasons. And we saw that, you know, last summer, starting to get some calls from people who had never owned farmland and wanted to invest. You know, not a large amount. They weren't going to buy that $1 million quarter section probably, but they might buy that $250,000, you know, dry land farm or something. So they wanted to be in that food and ag space and the real estate space for various reasons because of COVID and so forth. So a little bit of that picked up, but again, those are still the smaller part of the overall buying pool.
Well, it has been a dynamic market there as well, along with everything else we've been seeing in commodities. Randy, thank you so much for jumping here here with us on AgriTalk and just kind of giving us an idea of what's been going on and how these sales are moving. We will continue the conversation here on AgriTalk, including checking our markets next with the folks over Pro Farmer. Stick with us. More AgriTalk straight ahead.
Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Brian Grady joining us now with a look at our markets. Pretty big trades overnight. Brian, how are we stacking up today?
Yeah, Clinton exploded higher again overnight. Backed off once we got to daytime trade, but still got good solid gains going. I think the two markets that are noteworthy, May soy oil is sharply higher, and May corn futures, they're up over 20 cents right now. So both those contracts, obviously, they go into delivery on Friday, and so we're seeing some breakaway price strength in both of them. May corn futures are above $7 and just continue to surge there. We are seeing lesser buying interest in the deferred contracts, and they backed well off their overnight highs.
How much did the crop progress report play into what we've seen here in the last day?
Honestly, I don't think it's a whole lot at this point in the season, really early in the planting season here in the U.S. I think the bigger impact market-wise is Brazil's Safrina corn crop, so that second corn crop. Mm-hmm. It got planted historically late, and now it's facing dryness, and it looks like the end of the Brazilian rainy season has probably already happened earlier than normal. So you got a late planted crop, and then the early end of the rainy season, and it causes stress on the crop.
How are livestock holding up with these grain prices moving?
Well, the feeder cattle market, it's shooting higher. It's sharply higher in most of the contracts. Live cattle futures are higher, slight to moderate strength there. The hog market, it's under some heavy pressure in the front end of the market, moderate selling pressure in the back end of the market. So we kind of got split trade going on with the cattle complex higher and hogs lower.
All right. Well, it'll be a pretty dynamic day. We'll check back in with you all a little later. Thanks.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by AgriWeb, the digital ranch management solution that puts your whole operation right at your fingertips. Get your first month free by visiting agriweb.com. That's AgriWeb with two B's /drovers today.
Hey, welcome back to AgriTalk. As I mentioned there, talking with Brian Grady about the crop progress report, USDA yesterday saying 17% of the nation's corn crops in the ground. That's up 9% just the last week, but it's still 3% below the five-year average. Soybeans, 8% of the crops now planted, up 5% from last week, 3% above the five-year average. Cotton planting picking up steam a little bit at 12% planted now. We're going to bring in Kurt Blades, Senior VP of Agriculture Services at AEM. And Kurt, we want to talk to you about a couple of different things, including some of the you know, the precision ag research that y'all have been doing, and kind of how that technology can really help farmers become more sustainable. Before we do that, though, talk to us a little bit about where we stand on some of these supply issues and parts availability and things that's been going on that are semi-pandemic related here as we kind of hit the planting season and folks are out in the field needing stuff.
Well, thanks for having me on, and you framed it up correctly. There are there's a supply chain issue, not just in agriculture machinery, but kind of across the board. I know you probably have heard the same thing on the crop protection side, on the fertilizer side. It's kind of across the board, and it is also, you know, somewhat global pandemic related, but it also is a little bit more complicated than that.
Okay.
As we look at the machinery side specifically, I mean, if you think back this time last year, we did everything we could to make sure that ag equipment was considered an essential industry. So those plants stayed open, and we kind of worked through basically to get us through planting season. And that same kind of full court press is happening right now. I mean, we know that there are some definite concerns out there, whether it's shipping or steel or semiconductors or transportation just in general, that is causing some, you know, disruptions in the supply chain. The priorities being given to like wear parts, make sure that planting happens. And it makes, you know, kind of do everything we can to make sure that that farmers can keep that uptime happening as they get through the planting season.
How would you characterize this? Is this, in your experience, somewhat unprecedented, or is this just kind of another blip on a radar that we kind of see in cycles from time to time?
Well, I would say it's unprecedented. Again, you've got to look at this with a little bit of a historical perspective. We're sitting here the end of April. This time last year, we had really not a lot of indication of whether the ag market was going to be strong, whether manufacturing was going to be strong, really kind of whether the economy was going to be, you know, even around. So as you look forward, it was very difficult to forecast, you know, the production cycles and the supply chain. Mm. And as you look at the machine numbers over the last year, we've really had some really nice sales in ag equipment, in automobiles, in all of electronics. And that's put a lot of pressure on that supply chain. So if you kind of couple that sort of increased demand that wasn't necessarily expected with all of those, you know, pandemic related issues, like, you know, in other countries and even here in the United States where production may not be at full capacity. And then you add to that shipping concerns and all the global trade concerns that exist out there. We kind of have are in a little bit of an unprecedented time. Mm. It's going to work itself out, but it's a little bit of a difficult, you know, few months ahead of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking with Kurt Blades. He's with AEM. Kurt, let's real quick talk to me about this, the demand that we're seeing on the machinery side of agriculture, because, you know, our good friend, Greg Peterson says it's kind of the hottest market he's seen in his entire career. What do you think about that? How are we doing? And are manufacturers working to keep up?
Well, I'll tell you, I represent equipment manufacturers, so I love it. I'm not going
right.
to lie.
We love selling
new equipment, so there's no getting around that. But I'll tell you, it is also, I think, as Greg pointed out, it's a bit unprecedented and frankly a little surprising.
Mm.
We've been above the 5-year average, you know, for 12 months now. And that's driven largely by small equipment. Under 40 horsepower tractors
okay.
are just, you know, selling like hotcakes. In fact, they're 50% up year to date. Crazy
wow.
numbers.
Wow.
Crazy numbers in that under 40 horsepower market. That's a lot of non-farm use. But I'll tell you, row crop tractors, chore tractors, articulated four-wheel drives, combines, they're all up across the board. A lot of things. This kind of has started, you know, really in the fall last year, I think when folks were looking at their crop and saw that it was looking pretty decent,
mm.
we started to see some pretty good indications that commodities were coming back, started to see some windows open up with trade, and saw some of the storm clouds around biofuels get out of the way. So I think what we got is just a whole lot of optimism out there in rural areas where folks feel comfortable enough to reinvest in their capital equipment and recognizing that their farming business is going to be around for a few more years.
Well, Kurt, I think that's, obviously, I think that's exactly where we're at right now is just that idea of like, hey, we may have a year or two here where we feel like we're going to have enough capital to go ahead and reinvest and kind of make sure that we're set up for the next decade or however long, you know, folks plan to use their equipment. One of the other things that's been going on from your perspective, with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers as a group. You've been doing some research kind of in this whole sustainability and how that plays into the conversations coming out of Washington about climate and what farmers are doing and the impact they can have. Talk to us about some of the research that you've been doing and some of the great numbers, I think, that have been coming out about agriculture.
Well, thanks for that question, and I'm thrilled to talk about this. You know, as all of your listeners know that are involved in farming and those that have adopted precision ag, you know it's just logic that when your tractor drives itself and you're being a little bit more efficient, there is an environmental story there. And what we've been hearing for years, from anyone ask us questions, say, well, what can you quantify what those numbers are? It just makes logical sense, but can you quantify it? And we did a little digging, and we couldn't find anything out there. There were states and pockets here and there. Different universities had done a little bit of research here and there, talking about the environmental benefits. Most of the benefits of precision ag have really been quantified in the economic benefits to the farmer, and that makes perfect sense. What we attempted to do was take those aggregated numbers on each individual farm and take them on a national view to say, hey, what percentage of the gains that we've seen in productivity over the last 20 years have been directly related to precision agriculture?
Sure.
As farmers adopt precision agriculture, how much fuel savings can we see as an aggregated farm population? And I'll tell you, when we put those numbers together, you're absolutely right. They were pretty phenomenal, and we're absolutely getting the attention of the regulators and the lawmakers out there.
You know, it is interesting. We asked this question with Farm Journal, did our Pulse poll, and we said, hey, if you won the lottery today, what would be the first technology thing you would invest in? And kind of overwhelmingly, the number that came back the highest was variable rate precision technology. And I think we're going to continue to see that investment. And, you know, Kurt, as we look at some of these commodity prices and you know, we maybe have a little more capital to invest, is it your opinion that we'll continue to see more investment in this space as we kind of seek out these efficiency gains?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as I mentioned before, the economics of it sort of pay out. I mean, right. That's where it sort of makes sense. If your farm is set up, you know, and you're at the right scale and you've got the right system in place, the economics absolutely pay out on the precision farming, whether it's, you know, variable rate, you know, technology in your application or your seeding or whatever it might amount to. The economics pay out. What we like to see is that, you know, that's the farmer benefit. But if we can continue to tell the farm story that, hey, farmers are adopting this for their own reasons, but the societal gains are pretty darn good as well, that's a win-win. And I'll say that helps alleviate some of those arguments that we've been dealt with over the last, few decades, where it seems to be, you know, ag versus environmentalist. I think what we're finding right now in this current crop of conversations is it's not either or. It's we're in this thing together, and farmers are part of the solution. In my opinion, precision agriculture, some of this technology is absolutely part of the solution, and it plays out very nice because it wins for the environment, wins for farmers, it wins for everybody.
Kurt, we got a couple minutes here. What have you heard after you did this research and you've kind of put out this information? What has been the response from the circles outside of agriculture, as we were talking about, from those some of those environmental groups and things? Because as you mentioned, it seems like nobody had really quantified the numbers or put pencil down.
Well, it's funny, and I don't want to overstate this, but I tell you, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. And frankly, surprisingly positive in a lot of the circles. When talking with environmental groups specifically, what we find, one of the early things we did in this study, and we had the good sight to do this, is we wrote this not for farmers, but it's for the non-farm audience. Mm. So we started at the very basic level, what's considered precision agriculture, and created some very simple definitions. We found a lot of times when talking to a regulator, they don't even get that. So when we get past that conversation, there's light bulbs that go off. And then we point that to some credible numbers. Everyone says, thank you. This is exactly the information that we've been looking for. And then the next step, and this part gets really exciting, they say, what do we do now? How do we improve the adoption? And so that gives us the really easy chance to have a conversation about rural broadband and the educating the consumers that technology is a good thing for farming. And technology broadly defined, obviously I'm talking about precision ag here, but broadly defined, having the conversation that farmers are are all environmentalists, and they get this at their heart, that they, you know, it's in their best interest to protect the land. And then when we start talking about things, you know, you hear a lot of conversation around, you know, things that are happening in D.C. where there's incentives to decrease your environmental footprint. Farming's right along there with it. And if we ever have a chance to have those conversations, that perhaps there's incentives out there for farmers to take advantage of some of this technology to make some of those adoptions make a little bit more economic sense. Hey, these are conversations that we haven't been able to have for years. And I'm thrilled that every time we have these meetings with regulators, they get it right away. So neat things happening in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good stuff, Kurt Blades. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you. Senior VP Agriculture Services at AEM. Thanks for all you're doing for the industry and really kind of coming out with some of those calculations, because I think it is a good story for agriculture and one that we're going to continue to follow. Thanks for being here. We're going to continue the AgriTalk conversation after this short break from our sponsors.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, where everything's fine. It's all good.
Hot stepping.
It's all fine.
Hot stepping to a little no Justin Timberlake.
That's right. Well, I think that's a good transition to our next guest. We have got Tricia Beal, CEO of the Farm Journal Foundation. And Tricia, one of the things that you're doing this week is continuing a Farm Journal Foundation speaker series, and you're going to be talking about the connection of consumers and food. Set this conversation up for us, because, you know, hey, this gets right to the heart of what we do every day.
That sounds great. And I like your Justin Timberlake. Yeah. Thank you for having me this morning.
Absolutely.
No, so this is really exciting. This is the second year for Farm Journal Foundation to host our university speaker series. And just to give a context for who we're talking to in this series, we have 20 university partners who have come together with us, along with 6 student organizations. So it's really more than just a traditional speaker series. It's a framework and of partnership. And through this, we've engaged with specific programs across universities to reach to the future influencers of the value chain of food and agriculture. Mm. So we're really talking to the future farmers, future nutritionists, future policymakers, future people who will engage in this value chain and made a commitment to this. And so what we've learned over the past year in particular is that more than ever before, people are deeply considering the impact of the food they consume on their personal health and on the environment. They're seeing this as their own personal food footprint. That's how we're describing it at the foundation. And COVID-19 has just accelerated, you know, the uptake of ideas in relationship to things such as food as medicine, food justice, equating, you know, the origin of your food to the impact on the environment. People are really thinking about this. And so we're bringing together some of the largest food companies in the world, including Danone, PepsiCo, Tyson, along with some great research that looks at global trends on consumer acceptance out of the UK called FMCG Gurus. And we're going to explore this, you know, evolving relationship of consumers and food with hundreds of students across the United States and other people. Everyone's invited to participate.
You know, it's fascinating. Obviously, food is so personal. I mean, people generally eat and eat multiple times a day. So that, you know, that connection to that activity and that part of our lives is so, people just are so passionate about it. From your perspective, what type of, is there a foundation that needs to be built before we can continue some of these conversations, or is it really just about opening the door and having them? And when I say a foundation, I mean getting a framework for, okay, when we say farming, this is farming, you know, just some of the basics there. What?
So we're working across such a diverse group of stakeholders the foundation, and particularly within these college and university populations. And so I think that everyone, we recognize that everyone comes to the table that we're setting to have this discussion with their own perceptions and their own foundations that they've been building over time. And so our work in this space is to really provide a dialogue and an open an open and safe space for people to think critically about these issues and maybe open their minds and open that door, as you said, you know, to considering other pathways and other, you know, other alternatives and what they maybe have, you know, held closely by, you know, perceptions they've developed over time. Mm. So we're trying to inspire critical thinking and engagement with these students that creates a conversation that takes this, you know, a little further down the path.
Super fascinating. I mean, that's some of the same kind of things that Shay Myers that was on earlier talked about, you know, and his engagement on TikTok with different consumers and folks like that. It's just, you know, just kind of opening the door and having these conversations that are real and raw and just debating and talking and, you know, just really trying to educate each other from where we're all coming from with the goal in mind of feeding as many people as well as we can.
That's quick, right.
Talk to us about if folks are interested, how can they watch? How can they follow along? How can they join the conversation?
Okay, great. So this, the second installment of our speaker series for 2021 is happening tomorrow, and it will be from 2:30 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you're interested in participating, you can visit Farm Journal Foundation's Facebook page. Just, you know, go to Facebook, put in Farm Journal Foundation, and we have all the registration information available there. You can either participate via Zoom, you can watch it on Facebook Live, or it will be available on YouTube, on our YouTube channel after the fact.
All right. Well, good stuff. Good luck, and thank you for sharing some of that information. Hopefully folks can get out to the Farm Journal Foundation Facebook page and follow along and be part of that conversation. Thanks so much, Tricia. Great talking with you today on AgriTalk.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Davis, this has been a pretty interesting show from just so many things that are happening. You know, from the high prices that we're seeing in the markets today and this week, to the challenges of getting supplies through the supply chain, to the conversations about labor and the challenges there. It's just been kind of a fascinating wrap up of what 2021 is doing and bringing us. And it's fine. It's all great.
It's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine.
Interesting thing that Tricia brought up, and I'm glad that she did. It's not something that's talked about. It's something that isn't talked about nearly enough. Mm. Did I say that right? We don't talk about this enough. Critical thought must not be a casualty of our current woke culture. There's an awful lot of grandstanding, bully pulpitism. A lot of people just want to take ideas and force us to accept them, to bow to them in some cases, quite literally. Critical thought.
Yeah. You know,
just because someone doesn't agree with us doesn't mean that they are wrong. Just because we don't agree with someone else doesn't mean that we are wrong. Let's maintain that critical thought. It is part of the strength of this glorious nation, and we have to maintain that tradition.
I like that point. And I will also add that, having a real adult conversation, never a bad idea. Again,
correct.
We don't always all have to agree, and we won't all agree, and that is okay.
And we shouldn't. We shouldn't.
It's fine to have a conversation that's civil, that's well thought out, that's a good discussion and discourse back and forth. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think just being able to treat each other well and with respect as we have those conversations will go a long way in kind of helping get everybody through 2021, because
Preach.
It's all going to be fine. Have a great afternoon. This has been AgriTalk.